on," explained Deenan. "Our trail will take us many days and many miles from the city."
"How long?"
Drizzt asked, suddenly very curious.
"2 10 days, maybe 3, replied Deenan. "But well worth the time. We shall be the ones, my young brother, who enact a measure of revenge upon our most hated foes, who strike a glorious blow for the Spider Queen."
Drizzt thought that he understood, but the notion was too outrageous for him to be certain.
"The elves," Deenan beamed. "We have been chosen for a surface raid."
Drizzt was not as openly excited as his brother, unsure of the implications of such a mission. At last, he would get to view the surface elves and face the truth of his heart and hopes. Something more real to Drizzt, the disappointment he had known for so many years, tempered his elation, reminded him that while the truth of the elves might bring an excuse to the dark world of his kin, it might instead take away something more important. He was unsure how to feel.
"The surface," Alton mused. "My sister went there once, on a raid. A most marvelous experience, so she said."
He looked at Massage, not knowing how to figure the forlorn expression on the young Hunnet's face.
"Now your patrol makes the journey. I envy you."
"I am not going," Massage declared.
"Why?"
Alton gasped.
"This is a rare opportunity indeed. Menzo Berenzon, to the anger of Lolf, I am certain, has not staged a surface raid in 2 decades. It may be 20 more years before the next, and by then you will no longer be among the patrols."
Massage looked out from the small window of Alton's room in House Hunnet, surveying the compound.
"Besides," Alton continued quietly, "up there, so far from prying eyes, you might find the chance to dispose of 2 Dowerdens. Why would you not go?"
"Have you forgotten a ruling that you played a part in?" Massage asked, whirling on Alton accusingly. 2 decades ago, the Masters of Sorcerer decided that no wizards are to travel anywhere near the surface."
"Of course,"
Alton replied, remembering the meeting. Sorcerer seemed so distant to him now, though he had been within the Hunnet house for only a few 10 days. "We concluded that drow magic may work differently, unexpectedly, under the open sky," he explained. "On that raid 20 years ago,
"I know the story,"
Massage growled, and he finished the sentence for Alton.
"A wizard's fireball expanded beyond its normal dimensions, killing several drow. Dangerous side effects, you masters called it, though I've a belief that the wizard conveniently disposed of some enemies under the guise of an accident."
"Yes," Alton agreed. "So said the rumors. In the absence of evidence—"
He let the thought go, seeing that he was doing little to comfort Massage.
"That was so long ago," he said, trying to offer some hope. "Have you no recourse?"
"None," Massage replied. "Things move so very slowly in Menzo Berenzon. I doubt that the Masters have even begun their investigation into the matter."
"A pity," Alton said. "It would have been the perfect opportunity."
"No more of that," Massage scolded. "Matron Sinefe has not given me her command to eliminate Drizzt Do'Urden or his brother. You have already been warned to keep your personal desires to yourself. When the matron bids me to strike, I will not fail her. Opportunities can be created."
"You speak as if you already know how Drizzt Do'Urden will die," Alton said. A smile spread over Massage's face as he reached into the pocket of his robe and produced the onyx figurine, his unthinking magical slave, which the foolish Drizzt had come to trust so dearly.
"Oh, I do," he replied,
giving the statuette of Guinevere an easy toss, then catching it and holding it out on display.
"I do."
The members of the chosen raiding party quickly came to realize that this would be no ordinary mission. They did not go out on patrol from Menzo Berenzon at all during the next 10 days. Rather, they remained, day and night, sequestered within a barrack of Mele Magvir. Through nearly every waking hour, the raiders huddled around an oval table in a conference room, hearing the detailed plans of their pending adventure, and over again, Master Hatchnet, the Master of Lore, spinning his tales of the vile elves. Drizzt listened intently to the stories, allowing himself, forcing himself to fall within Hatchnet's hypnotic web. The tales had to be true. Drizzt did not know what he would hold on to preserve his principles if they were not. Deenan presided over the raid's tactical preparations, displaying maps of the long tunnels the group would travel, grilling them over and over until they had memorized the route perfectly. To this as well, the eager raiders, except for Drizzt, listened intently, all the while fighting to keep their excitement from bursting out in a wild cheer. As the 10-day of preparations neared its end, Drizzt took note that one member of the patrol group had not been attending. At first, Drizzt had reasoned that Massage was learning his duties in the raid in Sorcerer with his old masters. With the departure time fast approaching and the battle plans clearly taking shape, though, Drizzt began to understand that Massage would not be joining them. "Where is our wizard?" Drizzt dared to ask in the late hours of one session. Deenan, not appreciating the interruption, glared at his brother.
"Massage will not be joining us," he answered, knowing that others might now share Drizzt's concern, a distraction they could not afford at such a critical time. "Sorcerer has decreed that no wizards may travel to the surface," Master Hatchnet explained. "Massage Hanet will await your return in the city. It is a great loss to you indeed, for Massage has proven his worth many times over. Fear not, though, for a cleric of Erectinaleth shall accompany you."
"What of—" Drizzt began above the approving whispers of the other raiders. Deenan cut his brother's thoughts short, easily guessing the question.
"The cat belongs to Massage," he said flatly. "The cat stays behind."
"I could talk to Massage," Drizzt pleaded.
Deenan's stern glance answered the question without the need for words.
"Our tactics will be different on the surface," he said to all the group, silencing their whispers. "The surface is a world of distance, not the blind enclosures of bending tunnels. Once our enemies are spotted, our task will be to surround them, to close off the distances."
He looked straight at his younger brother.
"We will have no need of a point guard, and in such a conflict, a spirited cat could well prove more trouble than aid."
Drizzt had to be satisfied with the answer. Arguing would not help, even if he could get Massage to let him take the panther, which he knew in his heart he could not. He took the brooding desires out of his head and forced himself to hear his brother's words. This was to be the greatest challenge of Drizzt's young life, and the greatest danger. Over the final 2 days, as the battle plan became ingrained into every thought, Drizzt found himself growing more and more agitated. Nervous energy kept his palms moist with sweat, and his eyes darted about, too alert. Despite his disappointment over Guinevere, Drizzt could not deny the excitement that bubbled within him. This was the adventure he had always wanted, the answer to his questions of the truth of his people. Up there, in the vast strangeness of that foreign world, lurked the surface elves, the unseen nightmare that had become the common enemy, and thus the common bond of all the drow. Drizzt would discover the glory of battle, exacting proper revenge upon his people's most hated foes. Always before, Drizzt had fought out of necessity, in training gyms, or against the stupid monsters that ventured too near his home. Drizzt knew that this encounter would be different. This time, his thrusts and cuts would be carried by the strength of deeper emotions, guided by the honor of his people and their common courage and resolve to strike back against their oppressors. He had to believe that. Drizzt lay back in his cot the night before the raiding party's departure, and brought his scimitars through some slow-motion maneuvers above him. "This time," he whispered aloud to the blades, while marveling at their intricate dance even at such a slow speed. "This time, your ring will sound out in the Song of Justice." He placed the scimitars down at the side of his cot, and rolled over to find some needed sleep. "This time," he said again, teeth clenched and eyes shining with determination. Were his proclamations his belief or his hope? Drizzt had dismissed the disturbing question the very first time it had entered his thoughts, having no more room for doubts than he had for brooding.
He no longer considered the possibility of disappointment. It had no place in the heart of a drow warrior. To Dinan, though, studying Drizzt curiously from the shadows of the doorway, it sounded as if his younger brother was trying to convince himself of the truth of his own words.
20. That Foreign World. The 14 members of the patrol group made their way through twisting tunnels and giant caverns that suddenly opened wide before them. Silent on magical boots and nearly invisible behind their powafuis, they communicated only in their hand code. For the most part, the ground slope was barely perceptible, though at times the group climbed straight up rocky chimneys, every step and every handhold drawing them nearer their goal. They crossed through the boundaries of claimed territories, of monsters and the other races, but the hated gnomes and even the Duergar dwarves wisely kept their heads hidden. Few in all the Underdark would purposely intercept a drow raiding party. By the end of a 10-day, all the drow could sense the difference in their surroundings. The depth still would have seemed stifling to a surface dweller, but the dark elves were accustomed to the constant oppression of 1,000,000 tons of rock hanging over their heads. They turned every corner expecting the stone ceiling to fly away into the vast openness of the surface world. Breezes wafted past them, not the sulfur-smelling hot winds rising off the magma of deep earth, but moist air, scented with 100 aromas unknown to the drow. It was springtime above, though the dark elves in their seasonless environs knew nothing of that, and the air was full of the scents of new-blossomed flowers and budding trees. In the seductive allure of those tantalizing aromas, Drizzt had to remind himself again and again that the place they approached was wholly evil and dangerous. Perhaps, he thought, the scents were merely a diabolical lure, a bait to an unsuspecting creature to bring it into the surface world's murderous grip. The cleric of Eric Tinnelith, who was traveling with the raiding party, walked near to one wall and pressed her face against every crack she encountered. "This one will suffice," she said a short time later. She cast a spell of seeing and looked into the tiny crack, no more than a finger's width, a second time.
"How are we to get through that?" one of the patrol members signaled to another.
Dinan caught the gestures and ended the silent conversation with a scowl.
"It is daylight above," the cleric announced. "We shall have to wait here."
"For how long?"
Dinan asked, knowing his patrol to be on the edge of readiness with their long-awaited goal so very near.
"I cannot know," the cleric replied. "No more than half a cycle of Narbindel. Let us remove our packs and rest while we may."
Dinan would have preferred to continue, just to keep his troops busy, but he did not dare speak against the priestess. The break did not prove a long one, though, for a couple of hours later, the cleric checked through the crack once more and announced that the time had come.
"You first," Dinan said to Drizzt.
Drizzt looked at his brother incredulously, having no idea how he could pass through such a tiny crack.
"Come,"
instructed the cleric, who now held a many-holed orb.
"Walk past me and continue through."
As Drizzt passed the cleric, she spoke the orb's command word and held it over Drizzt's head. Black flakes, blacker than Drizzt's ebony skin, drifted over him, and he felt a tremendous shudder ripple across his spine. The others looked on in amazement as Drizzt's body narrowed to the width of a hair and he became a two-dimensional image, a shadow of his former self. Drizzt did not understand what was happening, but the crack suddenly widened before him. He slipped into it, found movement in his present form merely an enactment of will, and drifted through the twists, turns, and bends of the tiny channel like a shadow on the broken face of a rocky cliff. He then was in a long cave, standing across from its single exit. A moonless night had fallen, but even this seemed bright to the deep-dwelling drow. Drizzt felt himself pulled toward the exit, toward the surface world's openness. The other raiders began slipping through the crack and into the cavern then, one by one with the cleric coming in last. Drizzt was the first to feel the shudder as his body resumed its natural state.
In a few moments they were all eagerly checking their weapons.
"I will remain here," the cleric told Dinan. "Hunt well. The Spider Queen is watching."
Dinan warned his troops once again of the dangers of the surface. Then he moved to the front of the cave, a small hole on the side of a rocky spur of a tall mountain.
"For the Spider Queen," Dinan proclaimed.
He took a steadying breath and led them through the exit, under the open sky.
Under the stars.
While the others seemed nervous under those revealing lights, Drizzt felt his gaze pulled heavenward to the countless points of mystical twinkling. Bathed in the starlight, he felt his heart lift and didn't even notice the joyful singing that rode on the night wind, so fitting it seemed. Dinan heard the song, and he was experienced enough to recognize it as the eldritch calling of the surface elves. He crouched and surveyed the horizon, picking out the light of a single fire down in the distant expanse of a wooded valley. He nudged his troops to action, and pointedly nudged the wonderment from his brother's eyes, and started them off. Drizzt could see the anxiety on his companions' faces, so contrasted by his own inexplicable sense of serenity. He suspected at once that something was very wrong with the whole situation. In his heart, Drizzt had known from the minute he had stepped out of the tunnel that this was not the vile world the masters of the academy had taken such pains to describe. He did feel unusual with no stone ceiling above him, but not uncomfortable. If the stars, calling to his heartstrings, were indeed reminders of what the next day might bring, as Master Hatchnet had said, then surely the next day would not be so terrible. Only confusion dampened the feeling of freedom that Drizzt felt, for either he had somehow fallen into a trap of perception, or his companions, his brother included, viewed their surroundings through tainted eyes. It fell on Drizzt as another unanswered burden. Were his feelings of comfort here weakness or truth of heart?
"They're akin to the mushroom groves of our home," Dinan assured the others as they tentatively moved under the perimeter boughs of a small forest. "Neither sentient nor harmful."
Still, the younger dark elves flinched and brought their weapons to the ready whenever a squirrel skipped across a branch overhead or an unseen bird called out to the night. The dark elves was a silent world, far different from the chattering life of a springtime forest, and in the Underdark, nearly every living thing could, and most certainly would, try to harm anything invading its lair. Even a cricket's chirp sounded ominous to the alert ears of the drow. Dinan's course was true, and soon the fairy song drowned out every other sound, and the light of a fire became visible through the boughs. Surface elves were the most alert of races, and a human, or even a sneaky halfling, would have had little chance of catching them unawares. The raiders this night were drow, more skilled in stealth than the most proficient alley thief. Their footfalls went unheard, even across beds of dry, fallen leaves, and their crafted armor, shaped perfectly to the contours of their slender bodies, bent with their movements without a rustle. Unnoticed, they lined the perimeter of the small glade, where a score of fairies danced and sang. Transfixed by the sheer joy of the elves' play, Drizzt hardly noticed the commands his brother issued then in the silent code. Several children danced among the gathering, marked only by the size of their bodies, and were no freer in spirit than the adults they accompanied. So innocent they all seemed, so full of life and wistfulness, and obviously bonded to each other by friendship more profound than Drizzt had ever known in Menzo Berenzon. So unlike the stories Hatchnet had spun of them, tales of vile, hating wretches. Drizzt sensed more than saw that his group was on the move, fanning out to gain a greater advantage. Still, he did not take his eyes from the spectacle before him. Dinan tapped him on the shoulder and pointed to the small crossbow that hung from his belt, then slipped off into position in the brush off to the side. Drizzt wanted to stop his brother and the others, wanted to make them wait and observe the surface elves that they were so quick to name enemies. Drizzt found his feet rooted to the earth, and his tongue weighted heavily in the sudden dryness that had come into his mouth. He looked to Dinan and could only hope that his brother mistakenly thought his labored breaths the exaltations of battle lust. Then Drizzt's keen ears heard the soft thrum of a dozen tiny bowstrings.
The elven song carried on a moment longer until several of the group dropped to the earth.
No!
Driz screamed in protest, the words torn from his body by a profound rage even he did not understand. The denial sounded like just another war cry to the drow raiders, and before the surface elves could even begin to react, Deenan and the others were upon them. Driz, too, leaped into the glade's lighted ring, his weapons in hand, though he had given no thought to his next move. He wanted only to stop the battle, to put an end to the scene unfolding before him. Quite at ease in their woodland home, the surface elves weren't even armed. The drow warriors sliced through their ranks mercilessly, cutting them down and hacking at their bodies long after the light of life had flown from their eyes. One terrified female, dodging this way and that, came before Drizzt. He dipped the tips of his weapons to the earth, searching for some way to give a measure of comfort. The female then jerked straight as a sword dived into her back, its tip thrusting right through her slender form. Drizzt watched, mesmerized and horrified, as the drow warrior behind her grasped the weapon hilt in both hands and twisted it savagely. The female elf looked straight at Drizzt in the last fleeting seconds of her life, her eyes crying for mercy. Her voice was no more than the sickening gurgle of blood. His face the exultation of ecstasy. The drow warrior tore his sword free and sliced it across, taking the head from the elven female's shoulders.
"Vengeance!" he cried at Drizzt, his face contorted in furious glee, his eyes burning with a light that shone demonic to the stunned Drizzt.
The warrior hacked at the lifeless body one more time, then spun away in search of another kill. Only a moment later, another elf, this one a young girl, broke free of the massacre and rushed in Drizzt's direction, screaming a single word over and over. Her cry was in the tongue of the surface elves, a dialect foreign to Drizzt, but when he looked upon her fair face, streaked with tears, he understood what she was saying. Her eyes were on the mutilated corpse at his feet. Her anguish outweighed even the terror of her own impending doom. She could only be crying,
"Mother!"
Rage, horror, anguish, and a dozen other emotions racked Drizzt at that horrible moment. He wanted to escape his feelings, to lose himself in the blind frenzy of his kin and accept the ugly reality. How easy it would have been to throw away the conscience that pained him so. The elven child rushed up before Drizzt but hardly saw him, her gaze locked upon her dead mother, the back of the child's neck open to a single clean blow. Drizzt raised his scimitar, unable to distinguish between mercy and murder.
"Yes, my brother,"
Deenan cried out to him, a call that cut through his comrade's screams and whoops and echoed in Drizzt's ears like an accusation. Drizzt looked up to see Deenan, covered from head to foot in blood and standing amid a hacked cluster of dead elves.
"Today you know the glory it is to be a drow,"
Deenan cried, and he punched a victorious fist into the air.
"Today we appease the Spider Queen!"
Drizzt responded in kind, then snarled and reared back for a killing blow. He almost did it. In his unfocused outrage, Drizzt Do'Urden almost became as his kin. He almost stole the life from that beautiful child's sparkling eyes. At the last moment, she looked up at him, her eyes shining as a dark mirror into Drizzt's blackening heart. In that reflection, that reverse image of the rage that guided his hand, Drizzt Do'Urden found himself. He brought the scimitar down in a mighty sweep, watching Deenan out of the corner of his eye as it whisked harmlessly past the child. In the same motion, Drizzt followed with his other hand, catching the girl by the front of her tunic and pulling her face down to the ground. She screamed, unharmed but terrified, and Drizzt saw Deenan thrust his fist into the air again and spin away. Drizzt had to work quickly. The battle was almost at its gruesome end. He sliced his scimitars expertly above the huddled child's back, cuffing her clothing but not so much as scratching her tender skin. Then he used the blood of the headless corpse to mask the trick, taking grim satisfaction that the elven mother would be pleased to know that, in dying, she had saved the life of her daughter. "Stay down," he whispered in the child's ear. Drizzt knew that she could not understand his language,
but he tried to keep his tone comforting enough for her to guess at the deception. He could only hope he had done an adequate job a moment later, when Deenan and several others came over to him.
"Well done," Deenan said exuberantly, trembling with sheer excitement. "A score of the orc bay dead, and not a one of us even injured. The matrons of Menzo Baranzon will be pleased indeed, though we'll get no plunder from this pitiful lot."
He looked down at the pile at Drizzt's feet, then clapped his brother on the shoulder.
"Did they think they could get away?" Deenan roared.
Drizzt fought hard to sublimate his disgust, but Deenan was so entranced by the bloodbath that he wouldn't have noticed anyway.
"Not with you here," Deenan continued. "Two kills for Drizzt."
"One kill," protested another, stepping beside Deenan. Drizzt set his hands firmly on the hilts of his weapons and gathered up his courage. If this approaching drow had guessed the deception, Drizzt would fight to save the elven child. He would kill his companions, even his brother, to save the little girl with the sparkling eyes, until he himself was slain. At least then, Drizzt would not have to witness their slaughter of the child. Luckily, the problem never came up.
"Drizzt got the child," the drow said to Deenan, "but I got the elder female. I put my sword right through her back before your brother ever brought his scimitars to bear."
It came as a reflex, an unconscious strike against the evil all about him. Drizzt didn't even realize the act as it happened, but a moment later he saw the boasting drow lying on his back, clutching at his face and groaning in agony. Only then did Drizzt notice the burning pain in his hand, and he looked down to see his knuckles and the scimitar hilt they clutched, spattered with blood.
"What are you about?" Deenan demanded.
Thinking quickly, Drizzt did not even reply to his brother. He looked past Deenan to the squirming form on the ground and transferred all the rage in his heart into a curse that the others would accept and respect.
"If ever you steal a kill from me again," he spat,
sincerity dripping from his false words,
"I will replace the head lost from its shoulders with your own."
Drizzt knew that the elven child at his feet, though doing her best, had begun a slight shudder of sobbing, and he decided not to press his luck.
"Come then," he growled. "Let us leave this place. The stench of the surface world fills my mouth with bile."
He stormed away, and the others, laughing, picked up their dazed comrade and followed.
"Finally," Deenan whispered as he watched his brother's tense strides. "Finally you have learned what it is to be a drow warrior."
Deenan, in his blindness, would never understand the irony of his words.
"We have one more duty before we return home," the cleric explained to the group when it reached the cave's entrance. She alone knew of the raid's second purpose. "The matrons of Menzo Baranzon have bid us to witness the ultimate horror of the surface world, that we might warn our kindred."
"Our kindred," Drizzt mused, his thoughts black with sarcasm. As far as he could see, the raiders had already witnessed the horror of the surface world, themselves.
"There!"
Deenan cried, pointing to the eastern horizon. The tiniest shading of light limned the dark outline of distant mountains. A surface dweller would not even have noticed it, but the dark elves saw it clearly, and all of them, even Drizzt, recoiled instinctively.
"It is beautiful,"
Drizzt dared to remark after taking a moment to consider the spectacle. Deenan's glare came at him icy cold, but no colder than the look the cleric cast Drizzt's way.
"Remove your cloaks and equipment, even your armor," she instructed the group. "Quickly, place them within the shadows of the cave so that they will not be affected by the light."
When the task was completed, the cleric led them out into the growing light.
"Watch,"
was her grim command. The eastern sky assumed a hue of purplish pink, then pink altogether, its brightening causing the dark elves to squint uncomfortably. Drizzt wanted to deny the event, to put it into the same pile of anger that denied the Master of Lore's words concerning the surface elves. Then it happened. The top rim of the sun crested the eastern horizon. The surface world awakened to its warmth, its life-giving energy. Those same rays assaulted the drow elves' eyes with the fury of fire, tearing into orbs unaccustomed to such sights.
"Watch!"
the cleric cried at them.
"Witness the depth of the horror!"
One by one,
the raiders cried out in pain and fell into the cave's darkness, until Drizzt stood alone beside the cleric in the growing daylight. Truly, the light assaulted Drizzt as keenly as it had his kin, but he basked in it, accepting it as his purgatory, exposing him for all to view while its stinging fires cleansed his soul.
"Come," the cleric said to him at length, not understanding his actions. "We have borne witness. We may now return to our homeland."
"Homeland?" Drizzt replied, subdued.
"Menzo Berenzon!" the cleric cried,
thinking the male confused beyond reason.
"Come, before the inferno burns the skin from your bones. Let our surface cousins suffer the flames, a fitting punishment for their evil hearts."
Drizzt chuckled hopelessly. A fitting punishment. He wished that he could pluck a thousand such suns from the sky and set them in every chapel in Menzo Berenzon to shine eternally. Then Drizzt could take the light no more. He scrambled dizzily back into the cave and donned his outfit. The cleric had the orb in hand, and Drizzt again was the first through the tiny crack. When all the group rejoined in the tunnel beyond, Drizzt took his position at the point and led them back into the descending path's deepening gloom, back down into the darkness of their existence.
21. May it please the goddess.
"Did you please the goddess?"
Matron Malice asked, her question as much a threat as an inquiry. At her side, the other females of House Doerden, Brisa, Vierna, and Maya, looked on impassively, hiding their jealousy.
"Not a single drow was slain," Deenan replied, his voice thick with the sweetness of drow evil. "We cut them and slashed them."
He drooled as his recounting of the elven slaughter brought back the lust of the moment.
"Bit them and ripped them."
"What of you?"
the matron mother interrupted, more concerned with the consequences to her own family's standing than with the raid's general success.
"Five," Deenan answered proudly. "I killed five, all of them females."
The matron's smile thrilled Deenan. Then Malice scowled as she turned her gaze on Drizzt.
"And him?"
she inquired, not expecting to be pleased with the answer. Malice did not doubt her youngest son's prowess with weapons, but she had come to suspect that Drizzt had too much of Zachnafane's emotional makeup to ever be an attribute in such situations. Deenan's smile confused her. He walked over to Drizzt and draped an arm comfortably across his brother's shoulders.
"Drizzt got only one kill," Deenan began. "But it was a female child."
"Only one?"
Malice growled. From the shadows off to the side, Zachnafane listened in dismay. He wanted to shut out the elder boy Doerden's damning words, but they held Zack in their grip. Of all the evil Zack had ever encountered in Menzo Berenzon, this surely had to be the most disappointing. Drizzt had killed a child.
"But the way he did it," Deenan exclaimed. "He hacked her apart, sent all of Loth's fury slicing into her twitching body. The Spider Queen must have treasured that kill above all the others."
"Only one,"
Matron Malice said again, her scowl hardly softening.
"He would have had two," Deenan continued. "Shor Nadal of House Maefret stole one from his blade, another female."
"Then Loth will look with favor on House Maefret,"
Brisa reasoned.
"No," Deenan replied. "Drizzt punished Shor Nadal for his actions. The son of House Maefret would not respond to the challenge."
The memory stuck in Drizzt's thoughts. He wished that Shor Nadal had come back at him, so he could have vented his rage more fully. Even that wish sent pangs of guilt coursing through Drizzt.
"Well done, my children,"
Malice beamed, now satisfied that both of them had acted properly in the raid.
"The Spider Queen will look upon House Doerden with favor for this event. She will guide us to victory over this unknown house that seeks to destroy us."
Zachnafane left the audience hall with his eyes down and one hand nervously rubbing his sword's hilt. Zack remembered the time he had deceived Drizzt with a light bomb, when he had Drizzt defenseless and beaten. He could have spared the young innocent from his horrid fate,
He could have killed Drizzt then and there, mercifully, and released him from the inevitable circumstances of life in Menzo Baranzon. Zack paused in the long corridor and turned back to watch the chamber. Drizzt and Deenan came out, Drizzt casting Zack a single, accusatory look and pointedly turning away down a side passage. The gaze cut through the weapons master.
"So it has come to this," Zack murmured to himself. "The youngest warrior of House Doerden, so full of the hate that embodies our race, has learned to despise me for what I am."
Zack thought again of that moment in the training gym, that fateful second when Drizzt's life teetered on the edge of a poised sword. It indeed would have been a merciful act to kill Drizzt at that time. With the sting of the young drow warrior's gaze still cutting so keenly into his heart, Zack couldn't decide whether the deed would have been more merciful to Drizzt or to himself.
"Leave us,"
Matron Sina Fey commanded as she swept into the small room lighted by a candle's glow. Alton gawked at the request. It was, after all, his personal room. Alton prudently reminded himself that Sina Fey was the matron mother of the family, the absolute ruler of House Hunnet. With a few awkward bows and apologies for his hesitation, he backed out of the room. Massage watched his mother cautiously as she waited for Alton to move away. From Sina Fey's agitated tone, Massage understood the significance of her visit. Had he done something to anger his mother, or more likely had Alton? When Sina Fey spun back on him, her face twisted in evil glee, Massage realized that her agitation was really excitement.
"House Doerden has erred," she snarled. "It has lost the Spider Queen's favor."
"How?" Massage replied. He knew that Deenan and Drizzt had returned from a successful raid, an assault that all of the city was talking about in tones of high praise.
"I do not know the details," Matron Sina Fey replied, finding a measure of calmness in her voice. "One of them, perhaps one of the sons, did something to displease Lolth. This was told to me by a handmaiden of the Spider Queen. It must be true."
"Matron Malice will work quickly to correct the situation," Massage reasoned. "How long do we have?"
"Lolth's displeasure will not be revealed to Matron Malice," Sina Fey replied. "Not soon. The Spider Queen knows all. She knows that we plan to attack House Doerden, and only an unfortunate accident will inform Matron Malice of her desperate situation before her house is crushed." "We must move quickly," Matron Sina Fey went on. "Within 10 cycles of Narbondel, the first strike must fall. The full battle will begin soon after, before House Doerden can link its loss to our wrongdoing."
"What is to be their sudden loss?"
Massage prompted, thinking, hoping he had already guessed the answer. His mother's words were like sweet music to his ears.
"Drizzt Doerden," she purred. "The favored son. Kill him."
Massage rested back and clasped his slender fingers behind his head, considering the command.
"You will not fail me," Sina Fey warned.
"I will not," Massage assured her. "Drizzt, though young, is already a powerful foe. His brother, a former master of Melee Magvir, is never far from his side."
He looked up at his matron mother, his eyes gleaming.
"May I kill the brother, too?"
"Be cautious, my son," Sina Fey replied. "Drizzt Doerden is your target. Concentrate your efforts toward his death."
"As you command," Massage replied, bowing low.
Sina Fey liked the way her young son heeded to her desires without question. She started out of the room, confident in Massage's ability to perform the task.
"If Deenan Doerden somehow gets in the way," she said, turning back to throw Massage a gift for his obedience, "you may kill him, too."
Massage's expression revealed too much eagerness for the second task.
"You will not fail me,"
Sina Fey said again, this time in an open threat that stole some of the wind out of Massage's filling sails.
"Drizzt Doerden must die within 10 days.
Massage forced any distracting thoughts of Deenan out of his mind.
"Drizzt must die," he whispered over and over, long after his mother had gone.
He already knew how he wanted to do it. He only had to hope that the opportunity would come soon.
The awful memory of the surface raid followed Drizzt, haunted him, as he wandered the halls of Daemon and Ashesbernon. He had rushed from the audience chamber as soon as Matron Malice had dismissed him, and had slipped away from his brother at the first opportunity, wanting only to be alone. The images remained, the broken sparkle in the young elven girl's eyes as she knelt over her murdered mother's corpse, the elven woman's horrified expression, twisting in agony as Sharnadal ripped the life from her body. The surface elves were there in Drizzt's thoughts. He could not dismiss them. They walked beside Drizzt as he wandered, as real as they had been when Drizzt's raiding group had descended upon their joyful song. Drizzt wondered if he would ever be alone again. Eyes down, consumed by his empty sense of loss, Drizzt did not mark the path before him. He jumped back, startled, when he turned a corner and bumped into somebody. He stood facing Zacnaphane.
"You are home," the weapons master said absently, his blank face revealing none of the tumultuous emotions swirling through his mind. Drizzt wondered if he could properly hide his own grimace.
"For a day," he replied, equally nonchalant, though his rage with Zacnaphane was no less intense. Now that Drizzt had witnessed the wrath of drow elves firsthand, Zac's reputed deeds rang out to Drizzt as even more evil.
"My patrol group goes back out at Narbindel's first light."
"So soon?"
asked Zac, genuinely surprised.
"We are summoned," Drizzt replied, starting past.
Zac caught him by the arm.
"General patrol?"
he asked.
"Focused," Drizzt replied. "Activity in the eastern tunnels."
"So the heroes are summoned," chuckled Zac.
Drizzt did not immediately respond. Was there sarcasm in Zack's voice? Jealousy, perhaps, that Drizzt and Deenan were allowed to go out to fight, while Zac had to remain within the House de Werden's confines to fulfill his role as the family's fighting instructor? Was Zack's hunger for blood so great that he could not accept the duties thrust upon them all? Zac had trained Drizzt and Deenan, had he not? And hundreds of others, he transformed them into living weapons, into murderers.
"How long will you be out?"
Zac pressed, more interested in Drizzt's whereabouts. Drizzt shrugged.
"A 10-day at the longest."
"And?"
"Home."
"That is good," said Zac. "I will be pleased to see you back within the walls of House de Werden."
Drizzt didn't believe a word of it. Zac then slapped him on the shoulder in a sudden, unexpected movement designed to test Drizzt's reflexes. More surprised than threatened, Drizzt accepted the pat without response, not sure of his uncle's intent.
"The gym, perhaps?" asked Zac. "You and I, as it once was?"
"Impossible," Drizzt wanted to shout. "Never again would it be as it once was." Drizzt held those thoughts to himself and nodded his assent.
"I would enjoy that," he replied, secretly wondering how much satisfaction he would gain by cutting Zacnaphane down.
Drizzt knew the truth of his people now, and knew that he was powerless to change anything. Maybe he could make a change in his private life, though. Maybe by destroying Zacnaphane, his greatest disappointment, Drizzt could remove himself from the wrongness around him.
"As would I," Zac said,
the friendliness of his tone hiding his private thoughts, thoughts identical to Drizzt's.
"In a 10-day, then," Drizzt said.
And he pulled away, unable to continue the encounter with the drow who had once been his dearest friend and who, Drizzt had come to learn, was truly as devious and evil as the rest of his kin.
"Please, my matron," Alton whimpered. "It is my right, I beg of you."
"Rest easy, foolish Devere," Sina Fey replied, and there was pity in her voice, an emotion seldom felt and almost never revealed.
"I have waited."
"The time is almost upon you," Sina Fey countered, her tone growing more threatening. "You have tried for this one before."
Alton's grotesque gawk brought a smile to Sina Fey's face.
"Yes," she said. "I know of your bungled attempt on Drizzt O'Erden's life. If Massage had not arrived, the young warrior would probably have slain you."
"I would have destroyed him," Alton growled.
Sina Fey did not argue the point.
"Perhaps you would have won," she said, "only to be exposed as a murderous impostor, with the wrath of all of Menzo Berenzon hanging over your head."
I did not care.
You would have cared, I promise you, Matron Sina Fey sneered. You would have forfeited your chance to claim a greater revenge. Trust in me, Alton de Vere. Our victory is at hand.
Massage will kill Drizzt, and maybe Deenan, Alton grumbled.
There are other Doerdens awaiting the fell hand of Alton de Vere, Matron Sina Fey promised. High priestesses.
Alton could not dismiss the disappointment he felt at not being allowed to go after Drizzt. He badly wanted to kill that one. Drizzt had brought him embarrassment that day in his chambers at Sorcerer. The young drow should have died quickly and quietly. Alton wanted to make up for that mistake. Alton also could not ignore the promise that Matron Sina Fey had just made to him. The thought of killing one or more of the high priestesses of House de Werden did not displease him at all. The pillowy softness of the plush bed, so different from the rest of the hard stone world of Menzo Berenzon, offered Drizzt no relief from the pain. Another ghost had reared up to overwhelm even the images of carnage on the surface, the specter of Zaknafane. Deenan and Vierna had told Drizzt the truth of the weapons master, of Zak's role in the fall of House de Vere, and how Zak so enjoyed slaughtering other drow who had done nothing to wrong him or deserve his wrath. So Zaknafane too took part in this evil game of drow life, the endless quest to please the Spider Queen. As I so pleased her on the surface, Drizzt couldn't help but mumble, the sarcasm of the spoken words bringing him some small measure of comfort. The comfort Drizzt felt in saving the life of the elven child seemed such a minor act against the overwhelming wrongs his raiding group had exacted upon her people. Matron Malice, his mother, had so enjoyed hearing the bloody recounting. Drizzt remembered the elven child's horror at the sight of her dead mother. Would he or any dark elf be so devastated if they looked upon such a sight? Unlikely, he thought. Drizzt hardly shared a loving bond with Malice, and most drow would be too engaged in measuring the consequences of their mother's death to their own station to feel any sense of loss. Would Malice have cared if either Drizzt or Deenan had fallen in the raid? Again Drizzt knew the answer. All that Malice cared about was how the raid affected her own base of power. She had reveled in the notion that her children had pleased her evil goddess. What favor would Loth show to House de Werden if she knew the truth of Drizzt's actions? Drizzt had no way to measure how much, if any, interest the Spider Queen had taken in the raid. Loth remained a mystery to him, one he had no desire to explore. Would she be enraged if she knew the truth of the raid? Or if she knew the truth of Drizzt's thoughts at this moment? Drizzt shuddered to think of the punishments he might be bringing upon himself, but he had already firmly decided upon his course of action, whatever the consequences. He would return to House de Werden in a 10-day. He would go then to the practice gym for a reunion with his old teacher. He would kill Zaknafane in a 10-day. Caught up in the emotions of a dangerous and heartfelt decision, Zaknafane hardly heard the biting scrape as he ran the whetstone along his sword's gleaming edge. The weapon had to be perfect, with no jags or burrs. This deed had to be executed without malice or anger. A clean blow, and Zak would rid himself of the demons of his own failures, hide himself once again within the sanctuary of his private chambers, his secret world. A clean blow, and he would do what he should have done a decade before. If only I had found the strength then, he lamented. How much grief might I have spared Drizzt? How much pain did his days at the academy bring to him that he is so very changed? The words rang hollow in the empty hall. They were just words, useless now, for Zak had already decided that Drizzt was out of reason's reach. Drizzt was a drow warrior, with all of the wicked connotations carried in such a title. The choice was gone to Zaknafane, if he wished to hold any pretense of value to his wretched existence. This time, he could not stay his sword. He had to kill Drizzt. 22. Gnomes. Wicked gnomes. Among the twists and turns of the tunnel mazes of the Underdark, slipping about their silent way, went the Zwerfnebli, the deep gnomes. Neither kind nor evil, and so out of place in this world of pervading wickedness, the deep gnomes survived and thrived. Haughty fighters, skilled in crafting weapons and armor, and more in tune to the songs of the stone than even the evil gray dwarves, the Zwerfnebli continued their business of plucking gems and precious metals in spite of the perils awaiting them at every turn. When the news came back to Blingdenstone, the cluster of tunnels and caverns that composed the deep gnome city, that a rich vein of gemstones had been discovered 20 miles to the east, as the rockworm, the Thokwa, burrowed. Borough Warden Belwar Disengulp had to climb over a dozen others of his rank to be awarded the privilege of leading the mining expedition. Belwar and all of the others knew well that 40 miles east, as the rockworm burrowed, would put the expedition dangerously close to Menzo Baranzon, and that even getting there would mean a 10-day of hiking, probably through the territories of 100 other enemies. Fear was no measure against the love Zwerfnebli had for gems, though, and every day in the Underdark was a risk. When Belwar and his 40 miners arrived in the small cavern, described by the advanced scouts, and inscribed with the gnome's mark of treasure, they found that the claims had not been exaggerated. The borough warden took care not to get overly excited, though. He knew that 20,000 drow elves, the Zwerfnebli's most hated and feared enemy, lived less than 5 miles away. Escape tunnels became the first order of business, winding constructions high enough for a 3-foot gnome, but not for a taller pursuer. All along the course of these, the gnomes placed breaker walls, designed to deflect a lightning bolt or offer some protection from the expanding flames of a fireball. Then, when the true mining at last began, Belwar kept fully a third of his crew on guard at all times and walked the area of the work with one hand always clutching the magical emerald, the summoning stone, he kept on a chain around his neck.
3 full patrol groups, Drizzt remarked to Deenan when they arrived at the open field on the eastern side of Menzo Baranzon. Few stalagmites lined this region of the city, but it did not seem so open now, with dozens of anxious drow milling about.
"Gnomes are not to be taken lightly," Deenan replied. "They are wicked and powerful."
"As wicked as surface elves?" Drizzt had to interrupt, covering his sarcasm with false exuberance.
"Almost," his brother warned grimly, missing the connotations of Drizzt's question.
Deenan pointed off to the side, where a contingent of female drow was coming in to join the group.
"Clerics," he said, "and one of them a high priestess. The rumors of activity must have been confirmed."
A shudder coursed through Drizzt, a tingle of pre-battle excitement. That excitement was altered and lessened, though, by fear, not of physical harm, or even of the gnomes. Drizzt feared that this encounter might be a repeat of the surface tragedy. He shook the black thoughts away and reminded himself that this time, unlike the surface expedition, his home was being invaded. The gnomes had crossed the boundaries of the drow realm. If they were as evil as Deenan and all the others claimed, Menzo Baranzon had no choice but to respond with force. If. Drizzt's patrol, the most celebrated group among the males, was selected to lead, and Drizzt, as always, took the point position. Still unsure, he wasn't thrilled with the assignment, and as they started out, Drizzt even contemplated leading the group astray. Or perhaps, Drizzt thought, he could contact the gnomes privately before the others arrived and warn them to flee. Drizzt realized the absurdity of the notion. He couldn't stop the wheels of Menzo Baranzon from turning along their designated course, and he couldn't do anything to hinder the 20 drow warriors, excited and impatient, at his back. Again he was trapped and on the edge of despair. Massage Hunnet appeared then and made everything better.
"Guinevar!" the young wizard called,
and the great panther came bounding. Massage left the cat beside Drizzt and headed back toward his place in the line. Guinevar could no more hide its elation at seeing Drizzt than Drizzt could contain his own smile. With the interruption of the surface raid and his time back home, he hadn't seen Guinevar in more than a month. Guinevar thumped against Drizzt's side as it passed, nearly knocking the slender drow from his feet. Drizzt responded with a heavy pat, vigorously rubbing a hand over the cat's ear.
They both turned back together, suddenly conscious of the unhappy glare boring into them. There stood Massage, arms crossed over his chest and a visible scowl heating up his face. "I shan't use the cat to kill Drizzt," the young wizard muttered to himself. "I want the pleasure for myself." Drizzt wondered if jealousy prompted that scowl. Jealousy of Drizzt and the cat, or of everything in general? Massage had been left behind when Drizzt had gone to the surface. Massage had been no more than a spectator when the victorious raiding party returned in glory. Drizzt backed away from Guinevere, sensitive to the wizard's pain. As soon as Massage had moved away to take his position farther down the line, Drizzt dropped to one knee and threw a headlock on Guinevere. Drizzt found himself even gladder for Guinevere's companionship when they passed beyond the familiar tunnels of the normal patrol routes. It was a saying in Menzo Baranzon that no one is as alone as the point of a drow patrol, and Drizzt had come to understand this keenly in the last few months. He stopped at the far end of a wide way and held perfectly still, focusing his ears and eyes to the trails behind him. He knew that more than 40 drow were approaching his position, fully arrayed for battle and agitated. Still, not a sound could Drizzt detect, and not a motion was discernible in the eerie shadows of cool stone. Drizzt looked down at Guinevere, waiting patiently by his side, and started off again. He could feel the hot presence of the war party at his back. That intangible sensation was the only thing that disproved Drizzt's feelings that he and Guinevere were quite alone. Near the end of that day, Drizzt heard the first signs of trouble. As he neared an intersection in the tunnel, cautiously pressed close to one wall, he felt a subtle vibration in the stone. It came again a second later, and then again, and Drizzt recognized it as the rhythmic tapping of a pick or hammer. He took a magically heated sheet, a small square that fit into the palm of his hand, out of his pack. One side of the item was shielded in heavy leather, but the other shone brightly to eyes seeing in the infrared spectrum. Drizzt flashed it down the tunnel behind him, and a few seconds later, Deenan came up to his side. "Hammer," Drizzt signaled in the silent code, pointing to the wall. Deenan pressed against the stone and nodded in confirmation.
50 yards? Deenan's hand motions asked.
"Less than 100, Drizzt confirmed. With his own prepared sheet, Deenan flashed the get-ready signal into the gloom behind him, then moved with Drizzt and Guinevere around the intersection toward the tapping. Only a moment later, Drizzt looked upon Zwerfnebli gnomes for the very first time. Two guards stood barely 20 feet away, chest-high to a drow and hairless, with skin strangely akin to the stone in both texture and heat radiations. The gnome's eyes glowed brightly in the telltale red of infravision. One glance at those eyes reminded Drizzt and Deenan that deep gnomes were as much at home in the darkness as were the drow, and they both prudently ducked behind a rocky outcropping in the tunnel. Deenan promptly signaled to the next drow in line, and so on, until the entire party was alerted. Then he crouched low and peeked out around the bottom of the outcropping. The tunnel continued another 30 feet beyond the gnome guards and around a slight bend, ending in some larger chamber. Deenan couldn't clearly see this area, but the glow of it, from the heat of the work and a cluster of bodies, spilled out into the corridor. Again, Deenan signaled back to his hidden comrades, and then he turned to Drizzt.
"Stay here with the cat," he instructed,
and he darted back down around the intersection to formulate plans with the other leaders. Massage, a few places back in the line, noted Deenan's movements and wondered if the opportunity to deal with Drizzt had suddenly come.